Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. It's hard to believe, but the 2020 presidential election process is in full swing. The crazy and chaotic Iowa caucuses kicked things off this past week, and it's now just over 3 weeks to Super Tuesday, the day on which presidential primaries will be held in North Carolina and 15 other locations. Here in the Tar Heel State, the plot grows only thicker as voters will be selecting nominees for governor, all 9 other Council of State offices, all 13 representatives to Congress, all 170 state legislators, and numerous appellate court judgeships. Earlier this week, I got a chance to chat about the election, as well as the likely impact of the impeachment acquittal and the State of the Union speech with Catawba College political scientist, Dr. Michael Bitzer. Well, Dr. Michael Bitzer, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Always good to be with you.
We're recording this in the middle of one of the more extraordinary weeks in modern American politics. We've had the Trump State of the Union speech, the expected acquittal in the impeachment trial. We had sort of the theatrics with the Speaker of the House shredding the president's speech. You got any overall takes on what's going on in Washington right now and the state of our national government?
You know, a lot of people talk about the State of the Union. Thinking about it last night and kind of sleeping on it overnight, I came to wake up this morning to, I think it's not necessarily the State of the Union, but really the state of our division. Because what last night I felt like truly represented was the best expression of the political divide, the polarization, the intensity of feelings on both sides, that as we kind of start the official march towards November with the Iowa caucus results slowly coming in and the president laying out a very clear base strategy for his campaign, this is the divide. If you need no other example of where we are politically, I think last night's theatrics and performances really indicate how deeply polarized we are becoming and will likely continue through November of this year, unfortunately.
The mere fact that nearly half of the country says in the polls that they think the President of the United States should be removed from office, and yet, despite that fact, he remains a very formidable foe and a strong candidate for re-election, really does evidence the sort of sharpness of that divide and the very intensity of the feelings on the two sides.
It really is. I've been talking for some time with folks and with reporters talking about how we are breaking norms. These are kind of the unwritten rules. These are the traditions that we have in American politics, things that are just expected of both political parties. For example, when typically presidents are introduced, even by opposition party speakers of the houses, they say, "I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you the President of the United States." Well, last night it was simply members of Congress, the President of the United States. Mm-hmm. And then the refusal beforehand for the president to shake the speaker's hand. And then at the end, the ripping of the script that was presented to the speaker by the president. Yes, they're two individuals, but they are symbols of both political parties, and the feelings and the expressions of both of them represent, I think, for both sides, the true divide that is in American politics.
Yeah. It's going to be an amazing almost 9 months till we have the election. The other amazing development that's happened this past week, of course, was the vote in Iowa and the Democratic caucuses there. And the fact that we had this sort of confusing result in which the numbers only trailed in after a day after the vote, and then it was a muddled result. Is there anything that comes out of this other than that pretty much everybody thinks that it's time to stop paying much attention to Iowa?
I think, you know, every 4 years we go through this continuous conversation of why Iowa? Why do they get to go first? And, you know, it's been 3 presidential election cycles now where we have had some kind of controversy come out of the Iowa caucuses. Now, parties are entitled to set their calendars and their schedules. And Iowa, since 1972, has kind of had a lock on that first in the nation caucus, with New Hampshire having the first in the nation primary. Neither state is representative of particularly the Democratic Party. And, you know, a lot of the questions now is, why are we still utilizing a caucus system that can be fairly complex, that does not allow wide participation by folks to have a voice in the selection process? And why do they get to go first? So I think, you know, we have these conversations and we have these issues for the past three cycles pop up. And then a year later, it's kind of like, well, Iowa's going to keep their stranglehold on it. And then in 3 years, we have this conversation all over again. So it's really going to take the Democratic Party, I think, for sure, to say something has got to change and we've got to go with a new system, app or no app. You know, the process is flawed, and there may be a push, I think, for a more representative state of the Democratic coalition.
Perhaps,
but traditions die hard.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. I mean, do you take anything out of the results? The fact that Buttigieg and Sanders and Warren were actually all, at least I guess it looks like, slightly ahead of the former Vice President Biden. Is it likely just to be forgotten within a few days or a few weeks?
Considering that we have New Hampshire next Tuesday, you know, a week afterwards, I think, you know, things will move on. The big thing that really surprised me was Buttigieg's performance. Not a lot of people had expected that, but his ground game benefited from the rules of the caucus that was set in place. Certainly Bernie Sanders was going in with a past history and a strong record. All the talk about Elizabeth Warren's ground game didn't seem to come to fruition. And I think the biggest surprise was a very poor performance by Joe Biden. And, you know, how does he regroup? The benefit was it was so muddled in terms of coming out that maybe that poor performance got lost. But he has to step up and really have a strong performance in New Hampshire, try and be competitive in Nevada. And if he waits until South Carolina, the momentum may have left him and switched to somebody else. We just don't know until all of this plays out in the next couple of weeks.
Well, the amazing thing, of course, is that we're just weeks away from voting here in North Carolina. It'll be Super Tuesday on March 3rd. 15 other states will be also voting by the dawn of spring. A couple weeks later, more than half the delegates will have been selected. One wonders how North Carolina plays into all this. We're obviously one of the larger states that'll be voting on Super Tuesday, but the candidates are going to be stretched and so thin in so many directions. Is it just purely going to be a TV campaign and an online campaign with a handful of brief appearances as candidates jet in and out of the state?
Yeah, we're moving from the grassroots, on the ground kind of a campaign to a pure retail politics. You know, California and Texas have primaries on the same day as North Carolina. They have larger delegates to be awarded than North Carolina. We're third in terms of all the states there with 110. But I think, you know, what would be critical for Democrats to realize is lay the groundwork in March for November. That's what I think happened when we had the May primary in 2008. Obama won in this state, but he left an infrastructure that was able to capitalize and flip the state to a Democratic win come November. That's what I always see as the critical part of whoever wins North Carolina. Do they keep their infrastructure, build on it, and then be ready for a very competitive battleground state come November?
What about the down ballot candidates? I mean, obviously, this is one of those election years in North Carolina in which everything except for one U.S. Senate seat basically is up. We've got the whole legislature, the whole congressional delegation, the governor, council of state. It's almost hard to imagine how all those candidates get any kind of real attention as they're running in their respective primaries. Of course, many races, there isn't much of a primary. Governor Cooper isn't opposed, yeah, for instance, but we've got, heck, a handful of candidates running for lieutenant governor, for superintendent, yep, of public instruction. Is it just going to be the activists who will decide this?
I think so. And what my data has shown is that, you know, both primaries tend to be overwhelmingly to the partisan registration advantage. Certainly unaffiliated voters have the opportunity to pick one party primary over the other. I think if the early voting in terms of mail-in ballots are any indication, all the unaffiliateds traditionally will pick the more competitive primary battle, and that's going to be on the Democratic side. But down ballot, those poor candidates are having to fight against trying to get some notification and some attention with everything else going on. You know, the presidential race is just going to suck the air out of the room. They have to try and compete. And so it's probably more online, targeting the activist and working the ground to make sure that they have the voice come March 3rd.
Maybe a clean sweep of your immediate family will might guarantee you a victory.
Exactly.
As we come to the end of our conversation with Dr. Michael Bitzer, I guess, is there just any overarching, I mean, you've touched on this divide that's so sharp in our American and in North Carolina politics these days. Is there any particular developments you'll be looking for in the coming weeks and months that might indicate where the line's going to be drawn, who's going to get the 52% and who's going to have the 48% when it comes to November in terms of the future of our country?
My crystal ball is cracked. And the only prediction that I will make at this point is it will be bitter, it will be ugly, it will be divided, and even after the election, we will not have the coming together aspects that we normally tend to see. This is the new norm, and it's unfortunate. I think that does a lot of disservice, but the framers were intentional in setting up a system of dividing government power up and then saying, if you want to get anything done, you're going to have to compromise. If you don't want to get anything done, or if you want to be obstinate, then the system works. But you know where we are right now, I think, is unless there's a dramatic shift that I don't foresee happening, we're in it for the long haul, unfortunately.
Dr. Michael Bitzer is a professor of politics and history, the chair of the Department of Politics at Catawba College. You can follow him online at oldnorthstatepolitics.com. And we really appreciate your fine work for our state. Thank you so much. We look forward to checking in with you a little later this year to see how things are going.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Coming up next, a national expert discusses the surge of dark money in American politics and the anniversary of the Supreme Court case that unleashed it.